All right, I think we're going to get started. Good morning. My name is Hope Hogan, and I'm an Assistant Attorney General, and I'll be the hearing officer for our hearing today. This hearing, we have one hearing on our docket today, and that is for case number 24957. This is a motion of the commission to consider adopting new rules and amendments to the general rules and regulations for the conservation of crude oil and natural gas, codified as Article 43-02 of the North Dakota Administrative Code. There are copies of the proposed rule amendments up on the table. I don't believe we'll have enough for everybody, but if anybody wishes to have a copy, there are some available up on the table. This hearing, as well as the other hearings which will be held by the Commission this week, will be streamed live and can be listened to via the Department of Mineral Resources Oil and Gas Division website. Therefore, if you wish to provide testimony or a statement today, we'll have you come up to the table and speak into the microphones. The Industrial Commission is required to adopt administrative rules in accordance with North Dakota Century Code Chapter 28-32. This administrative rules hearing is held pursuant to North Dakota Century Code Section 28-32-11. The purpose of this hearing is to ensure the public has an opportunity to provide their comments and submit data, views, or arguments before administrative rules are adopted by the Commission. It is important to the administrative rules process that the public's comments are received and considered. If anyone believes that their ability to participate in this hearing is hampered by a disability of any kind, please let me know so that we can make arrangements for you to fully participate in the process. Please keep in mind that this is an administrative rules hearing and not a legislative or court hearing. The purpose of this hearing is to get input from the public, especially those who have not had a chance to be heard considering these rules, or those who have not or will not have an opportunity to submit written comments. This is not a question and answer session. The purpose of this hearing is not to pose questions to the Commission staff about the proposed rules, but an opportunity for Commission staff to receive input from the public. We would ask that you try not to repeat testimony of others, but rather refer to previous testimony that you might agree or disagree with. Otherwise, everybody who wishes to provide comment today will be given an opportunity. So I will now open the floor for testimony, at which time anybody wanting to speak should come forward. I would ask that you please state your name, address, and the organization you represent, if any. Everyone presenting testimony will be asked to sign a witness record sheet following your testimony. And everyone in attendance is asked to sign the attendance sheet for our record. Unfortunately, telephonic testimony will not be accepted today. To make sure that we understand the comments you are providing, following your statement or testimony, the Commission staff may ask you some questions regarding your statements. So now I'll ask whoever wishes to, or whoever would like to go first, to please come forward.
Director Helms and the committee members of the Industrial Commission, Department of Mineral Resource and Gas Division. My name is Gregory Johnson. As a licensed and registered professional land surveyor in North Dakota, I've practiced surveying for over 40 years through two oil booms in the state. I was born and raised in North Dakota, and I'm a veteran of the U.S. Army, 84th Artillery, 1970 through 72. I practiced surveying in North Dakota, South Dakota, Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and Wisconsin, and was licensed in each of those states. I am representing the North Dakota Society of Professional Land Surveyors as an industry committee member to help educate both landowners, industry agencies, and businesses who work in the energy business in North Dakota on easements and right-of-way rules, regulations, and codes. Our society is made up of over 300 members, of which some 185 are registered professional land surveyors who live and practice in this state. There is approximately 500 registered land surveyors who are licensed to practice in North Dakota. We are licensed and regulated by the North Dakota State Board of Registration for Professional Engineers and Professional Land Surveyors. Our mission and objective is to unite all the professional land surveyors in the state of North Dakota, to elevate the standards of the surveying profession, to establish basic minimum standards and requirements for surveys, to assist in promoting legislative and educational programs, to improve the professional status of the land surveyor, to work in cooperation with local, county, state, federal, and tribal governments in our field of endeavor, to uphold a rigid code of ethics, to strive to improve our relations with our clients and the public by doing our work with precision and integrity, to maintain a good relationship between land surveyors and engineers. I and the Society of Professional Land Surveyors are here to testify in favor of the proposed North Dakota Administrative Code 43-02-03-29.1 Underground Gathering Pipelines Rule Change, with the addition to correcting the proper GIS datum realization reporting requirements to comply with North Dakota Century Code 38-08-26 and North Dakota Century Code 47-20.2-03, describing the North Dakota coordinate system. The amended wording would read as follows. For GIS reporting, the operator of any underground pipeline placed into service after August 1, 2011, shall file with the Director of the North Dakota Industrial Commission, Oil and Gas Division, a Geographic Information System, GIS, digital file in Environmental System Research Institute, Incorporated, which is ESRI, line shape file, shape, along with the associated spatial realization reference map projection information describing the North Dakota coordinate system under North Dakota Century Code 47-20.2-03. Locating the center line of the pipeline as constructed from origin to terminating point. The submitted shapefile must have a completed attribute table datum realization listing, NAD 83 in either 1996, NSRS 2007, or 2011, or the most recent listing with the proposed North Dakota Administrative Code 43-02-03-29.1 required data. Also, in 43-02-03-29.1.4.K, one in parentheses, amend the wording to an accurate plat certified by a North Dakota registered surveyor showing the locations of the entry and exit points. We think these requirements are needed to help to define the various works being done by many individuals and companies in and out of state who may use other NAD 83 systems of information with different projection realizations. It is also important to have the registered surveyor be licensed in North Dakota. With the advent of GPS technologies and the varied GIS providers throughout the country, a standard needs to be stated for reporting this information to the appropriate agencies who use this information. Without mention of these requirements, varied results can and will happen for the location and referencing of items. The NAD 83 requirements need to have the specified projection realizations used for a particular project stated, as these spatial references and projections change over time, and as the National Geodetic Survey, NGS, information GIS, improves with new information collected, accepted, distributed, and published. On behalf of the North Dakota Society of Professional Land Surveyors, I therefore urge this committee to approve the recommendations stated above for the proposed North Dakota Administrative Code 43-02-03-29.1 rule. There are other references in Chapter 43-02-03 that should have this reporting information stated also that are not under current proposed rules change listed. If there are any questions.
Mr. Johnson, you're testifying on behalf of the professional land surveyors of North Dakota then?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you.
Gregory, the current rule as proposed talks about the NAD 83. Do you think that that isn't sufficient, that you need to define it further?
Yes, it needs to have those spatial references coded because as time goes on, as technology gets better, those reference systems are tied to a specific specifications by the National Geodetic Survey. So therefore, a NAD 83 1996 projection will give you a different location than NAD 83 2011. And the numbers do, they are significant. And so we reference that if any of those are referenced in the submittals to the commission, if we know what that is, we can always convert it to the most current if we have to. So there's nothing wrong with NAD 83, but that reference needs to be behind it so that it ties it to what was used, so that it's retraceable in the field. The mere state of NAD 83 does not allow a professional surveyor or anyone to go out and locate that on the ground with any kind of accuracy.
When that is submitted, is it typically noted what year that the NAD 83 is referencing?
That's correct.
So,
yes.
I mean, wouldn't that be information we would have in our system?
It's not required under your current rulings, and so we'd just like to have you require that spatial reference be annotated in the submittals to you. That way, if you give an outside firm or somebody in your other departments that shapefile with that reference, they'll know exactly what you're talking about at that point in time. And it doesn't matter if it's from 96 or down the road. If they make that statement, we can make the corrections the proper way.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Good morning.
Morning.
My name is Senator Ann Oban, and I am here representing myself and my constituents from District 35 here in Bismarck. My address is 1319 Apache Street, 58501 is the zip code. My comments today are strictly limited to the proposed amendment, which would add the definition of interested party in North Dakota Administrative Code Section 43-02-03-01, and specifically the restrictions that definition change would place on likely most of the nearly 15,000 North Dakotans who live as my neighbors in District 35. As someone who has now had the experience of sitting through hearings on the other side of the table, I can acknowledge the frustration and lengthy discussions that sometimes comes from having an open process. There were times during legislative hearings that we would have a line out the door of individuals or organizations wanting to rightly express their opinions, some of which I most certainly didn't agree, and share why the decision we were about to make on behalf of the public mattered to them. It would have been easier, I suppose, to limit that process to only allow a select few to testify. But my job as a public servant is not to make things easier for me. It's to make it open and accessible to the public. I don't care if adopting this proposed definition would quiet the voices of one specific group over another. It doesn't matter to me if it would limit an energy company or a farmer, rancher 10 miles down the road, or an environmental advocate, or my neighbor on Apache Street. The effect would still be the same. The quieting of the public's voice, and that's an effect none of us should accept. Please strike the proposed definition of interested party from your list of proposed rule changes. If we've been able to do business for decades without this restrictive definition, I'm certain we can continue to do business without it in the future. Thank you for your consideration.
Are there any questions from the staff?
Senator, the definition that we put out there was to try to get some explanation of what should be considered during testimony. When we went back and looked, of course, the statute does not define that. Do you know if that has been a subject of any legislation lately?
I don't see any scenario, at least in my short experience, and certainly in my experience as just a citizen who testified in front of committees before, that it was limited to any certain, you know, relation to the subject or your location in North Dakota. And frankly, we take a lot of opinions from people who don't live in the state who still have an interest in what happens in the state's activities.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you want me to leave that there?
Okay.
Good morning, committee members. My name is Wayland Hedegaard. Excuse me, I have a little bit of a cold. I'm the president of the AFL-CIO in North Dakota here, and I live in Bismarck. To make this really short, I have to agree with Senator Olban on this, the first proposed rule change. Reading directly off of your summary here, the purpose of the proposed amendments to NDAC 43-02-03-01 is to clarify who can testify at a commission hearing, skipping over the language part. The proposed amendments identify what interest a party must have to be allowed to testify. You know, I am in a, you know, you can put it one way, we are a labor advocacy group. We advocate for safe conditions, you know, conditions in the work site in both union and non-union labor. A strict reading of this rule would prohibit my group from coming to and testifying at these meetings, would prohibit any advocacy group from coming and testifying at these meetings. The essence of democracy is that everyone who thinks that they are a stakeholder in something comes together vocally or gets their opinion out there and then argues over it and we come to a compromise. It is not democracy when there's another group of people limiting who has interest in a certain thing. Democracy is a messy thing, and in all honesty, when we try to neaten it up, we don't so much as neaten it as take away somebody's democratic rights. It should be our democratic right, if we think that we have an interest in this commission or in one of these hearings, to come and state that. I wish that you would take that section out completely. Are there any questions? Thank you.
Wait, hang on.
Just a second. I just want to make sure that I know who it is that you're representing. Is it yourself or is it...
I'm representing the North Dakota AFL-CIO.
AFL-CIO, okay. I wasn't clear on that and I missed it in my notes. Thank you.
I'll move over.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Sarah Vogel. I do have written comments, unfortunately. I guess I didn't bring enough. Basically, I'm here to object to the proposed definition of interested party. I think that the overall role of the Oil and Gas Division has to be in line with the statutory obligation to represent the general public, and there's no better way to do that than to allow people who have specific concerns to come. I attached a photograph. It actually is from the recent Heritage Foundation's invitation to their big gala on May 9th. And it has a picture of two oil pads on the shores of Lake Sakakawea. And I think that this picture illustrates that there will be many people who are interested in the location, and perhaps they may not have a landowner interest, but perhaps they're fishermen, perhaps they're swimmers, perhaps they're adjoining landowners. I have land up at Montreal County, and I very much appreciate the comments of organizations such as the Dakota Resource Council, the Badlands Conservation Alliance, because I think they bring something to the table that I, as an individual landowner, may not have. So I very strongly urge you to drop this definition.
Are there any questions from the staff? Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Eric Thompson. I live at 4110 Crestwood Drive, Bismarck, North Dakota, 58503. I represent just myself. Thank you. The question needs to be asked if one wants to limit comments from interested parties on oil and gas leases is basically why. If a party drinks water, oil and gas development could make them an interested party because water is required for life and oil and gas development can affect water issues. If a party breathes air, oil and gas development could make them an interested party because air is changed by oil and gas development, and once again, air is a requirement for life. If a party wants to be a grandparent or a parent or intends to become either of those, they are interested parties if they intend to be good parents or grandparents, because oil and gas developments could threaten the lives of their progeny because of the oil or the air and water issues I listed earlier. If a party has any interest in the God-created creatures other than humans of this universe, they would be interested parties because every life form, whether it be plant or animal, requires water and air. Basically, anything that is alive is an interested party in these issues. The only things that would not be listed are rocks, logs, everything, soil has life in it. And these processes from the oil and gas industry can affect those life forms. So how can you say that anything does not have an interest in these issues? Questions?
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Laura Ann Halt, and I am a board member of the Badlands Conservation Alliance. But I have to say that I just happen to be a member of the Badlands Conservation Alliance. I would be here as just a regular citizen on this issue. And it is the issue of who can testify before this body, who is an interested party. It states that the property must have property ownership or management interest. Well, we're confused. They're public lands. They are owned by the public. We own them. They belong to all of us. If we are concerned about public lands, and we definitely have an interest, we own it, what is our recourse? And I have heard that there may be an attitude of, if you've heard from one environmental or land advocacy group, you've heard from them all. And this is not only insulting, but it is just not true. There are so many different aspects that can be brought to these issues. And how would this work? Who would choose who can testify? What's the criteria? Would there be an application process, which would be turned over to an overburdened staff? Or would it be decided on the spot who could testify? And the proposed definition is so exclusive rather than inclusive. I am so proud of North Dakota's transparency. And North Dakotans are very proud of the open records and open meetings laws in our state. Legislators meet only 80 days every 2 years. They do not limit who can testify. Countless county city commission meetings, school board meetings, they are not limited as to who can testify. The words arbitrary and capricious are, you know, come to mind. I just can't fathom why you would want to be known as the North Dakota government body that makes its citizens unwelcome. And I appreciate being able to testify here today now. Thank you. And my address, I'll put that over here. Okay.
And just so I'm clear, were you testifying on behalf of yourself today or on behalf of a BCA?
BCA today. Both.
Okay.
Both.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Tracy Potter. I've been told I represent white male privilege, but today just myself. What strikes me about the attempt to clarify who can testify on matters before your division is that it doesn't clarify it for me. The rivers and streams of North Dakota and their riparian zones are sovereign lands. State school lands are just that, state lands. The 2 million acres of the national grasslands are just that, national land. Public roads from interstates to township roads are just that, public. Are there actually any significant number of properties under your jurisdiction that are not adjacent to a creek, a section of school land, a part of the checkerboard of public ownership of the grasslands, or a township road? Are there any? So when I speak about my lack of clarity, I can't understand how this attempt to restrict what you will hear will have any effect unless you mean to declare that the citizens of North Dakota have no ownership interest in the public lands that are held in their name. I certainly hope that isn't what you mean. And I'd also like to draw your attention to Article 1 of the State Constitution, Section 5. This is in the Declaration of Rights, that the citizens have a right in a peaceful manner to assemble together for the common good and to apply to those invested with the powers of government for the redress of grievances or for other proper purposes by petition, address, or remonstrance. I'd stand for questions.
Thank you.
Mr. Potter, you didn't tell us what you recommended with regards to the definition.
I recommend that you leave it just as it is. Take that out. Take out the suggestion.
No definition.
That's correct.
Good morning. I haven't been here for a while, have I?
My name is... How do you keep this
there? It's not button there. Okay. My name is Wendy Ross. I represent the United States National Park Service. I've come into this room quite a few times and presented testimony. The National Park Service appreciates the opportunity to provide comments on the North Dakota Industrial Commission, Department of Mineral Resources, Oil and Gas Division's proposed amendments to the North Dakota Administrative Code. The NPS commends the commission for the proposed pertaining to bonding requirements and saltwater handling facilities. We are concerned with proposed amendments to NDAC 43-02-03-01 regarding what interest a party must have to be allowed to testify at a commission hearing. This language appears to limit our agency's ability to comment on permits that impact National Park Service sites in North Dakota. The NPS has provided testimony at dozens of commission hearings since 2010. Many cases were directed at oil and gas developments on lands not directly adjacent to NPS properties or managed by the agency. We have provided viewshed maps as part of our testimony, which clearly indicate visual impacts from development on both adjacent and non-adjacent lands. Although the NPS does not have direct management over the lands leased and developed for oil and gas activities, it does have an interest and preserving the visitor experience, viewshed, dark sky resource, air quality, and soundscape of the National Park Service lands. The agency is not a regulatory agency, but the Organic Act of 1916 requires the NPS to conserve the scenery and the natural and historic objects and wildlife therein, and to provide for the enjoyment of the same in such manner and by such means as will leave them unimpaired for the enjoyment of future generations. Park resources that reach beyond the authorized boundaries are difficult to preserve, and this is the only available state process to address oil and gas impacts on these lands. The permitting process that we have participated in to date has provided a forum for proactive mitigation of impacts. We believe that the early identification of impacts affords an opportunity to address impacts with companies and the state before permitting occurs. We welcome the opportunity to share concerns about impacts to our national treasures with the Commission. Discussions about proactive impact mitigation in the commission sessions allows park managers to preserve park resources for future generations. Thank you very much, and I wish that you would allow us to continue to provide testimony and proactive mitigation of those impacts to park resources.
Any questions from the staff?
Is your primary concern with the definition the term adjacent?
Adjacent and managing.
Okay. So you don't feel like National Park Service has a management interest in lands that would be considered in these cases?
We definitely do have a management interest, especially to those adjacent lands. The interpretation of management on lands that are outside of Park Service purview or non-adjacent is ambiguous.
Okay, thank you.
All right, who wants to go next?
My name is Jan Swenson. I'm here as representing the Badlands Conservation Alliance. I'm executive director. I live in Bismarck, North Dakota. Badlands Conservation Alliance has a history of providing testimony at North Dakota Industrial Commission hearings. In 2012 and 2013, our participation was infrequent, but since January of 2014, we have routinely reviewed monthly case dockets, providing testimony as relevant to our organizational mission and almost exclusively as impacts public lands. The required notice we provide to the Oil and Gas Division by 5 p.m. the day prior to the date of said hearings always begins with this statement. Badlands Conservation Alliance is a nonprofit conservation organization focused on management of public lands in western North Dakota, with particular attention to Theodore Roosevelt National Park, the Little Missouri National Grasslands, and state school lands under the North Dakota Department of Trust Lands. On the less frequent occasions that we speak to natural resource issues such as water quality protection, flaring impacts, or flaring exceptions, we include the current transformative cumulative impacts of energy development on the natural resources of western North Dakota have prompted us to advocate more broadly. BCA feels a deep and committed responsibility to follow and testify at monthly hearings. Four reasons. One, our organization and its members hold significant familiarity with these lands and value them for a host of ecological, heritage, and personal reasons, frequently through multiple generations. We have on-the-ground expertise. We know these places as part of a larger landscape, not only as section, township, and range. Two, we firmly believe that the earlier in the process concerns regarding oil and gas development are brought forward, the more likelihood that solutions can be found that satisfy all interests or at least mitigate impacts. Three, BCA is a proponent of comprehensive landscape scale planning, whether for industrial development, wildlife management, recreational planning, or any combination of these and other multiple uses on or impacting public lands. Four, our intent in testifying is to share our expertise, be it knowledge of the surface attributes or representation of values other than that of either industry or industry regulators. We want them to know where they are at on the surface, not only 2 miles below that surface. While state and federal agencies may at times share or closely align with BCA interests, that is not to be assumed and is on occasion contrary to fact. BCA routinely comments on both state and federal actions through both formal and informal processes. Just as we would not be satisfied with a state or federal agency being solely responsible for representation of our values or our preferred management direction, particularly without our input, we hold that the Oil and Gas Division of the Department of Mineral Resources cannot adequately claim to represent us as being no different than the general public. Public lands belong to all citizens. The people have ownership. We have responsibility to uphold the right to public involvement in management and development decisions. The proposed new definition of interested party is in and of itself unclear in meaning and arbitrary and capricious in intent. We anticipate it would have the practical effect of removing BCA's well-established interest in testifying at hearing. The lack of clarity and use of the term adjacent holds the risk of limiting or denying even local, state, and federal agency participation as regards their ability to protect their specific missions and jurisdictions. Private landowners would be denied the ability to voice concerns regarding actions impacting their surface values and their livelihoods that were beyond the confined legal description of their properties. For example, well pads or infrastructure impacting their water supplies. Public participation in the development of oil and gas in North Dakota should be more inclusive, not more exclusive, and absolutely so in the regulatory sphere of oil and gas hearings. We would all benefit. There is no need for a new definition of interested party, and this proposed rule change should be withdrawn. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Any questions from the staff? Great, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Good morning, Director Helms and members of the Oil and Gas Division staff. My name is Mike McEnroe. I'm representing the North Dakota chapter of the Wildlife Society. The chapter is comprised of some 350 wildlife biologists, land managers, administrators, educators, and natural resource law enforcement officers in North Dakota. We have a long history of commenting on oil and gas matters and public land issues in the state. The chapter supports many of the proposed rule changes, which provide greater safety for our landowners and the landscapes. We will be providing more detailed written comments on these. The definition of interested party appears to exclude public comment on oil and gas matters that affect public lands or that may occur next to or adjacent undefined public lands or may impact public lands somewhat farther away. The public deserves the opportunity and has the responsibility to provide input and comment on oil and gas issues that affect public lands and natural resources in our state. Therefore, the chapter opposes this proposed rule change and urges the Oil and Gas Division and Industrial Commission to delete it or else to rewrite it in a manner that allows for and encourages public comment on these on these oil and gas issues. Attorney General Stenjam was quoted recently in the newspaper as favoring robust public involvement in government actions. The chapter stands in agreement with the Attorney General on this one. Thank you for the opportunity to speak before you today.
Any questions from the staff? Thank you.
I don't have a question, but I have a comment I should have made earlier when you were doing the introduction. I think Bethany is going to pass around an attendance list, and if you would kindly sign that, we want to know who all is in attendance as well as who testified. And then the second thing is something I wanted to point out about the 10-day written comment period. The purpose behind that, of course, is, as Mr. McEnroe indicated, you can provide more detailed comments on your views or opinions on the rule changes, but there's an additional purpose, and that is that if you hear the comments of someone at this hearing or one of the following hearings the next few days that you agree with or disagree with, you have 10 days to respond to that. So it's a bit like a response brief time period. So I wanted to make you aware of that, is that it provides for that. If you hear someone provide information and you feel it's incorrect or you want to provide alternate information, that 10-day comment period allows for that. And I want to make sure everyone knew that. So.
Thank you.
We should also note that it's a 14-day comment period for today, because the 10 days isn't going to start until the fourth day of our hearings. So you have until 5 p.m. on the 25th to get those into our office. But we do want to receive those by 5 p.m. on the 25th of April.
Do we have other parties wishing to provide testimony?
Good morning. My name is Connie Triplett. I'm a state senator from Grand Forks. I represent District 18 and have since October of 2003. I'm also here representing myself personally, and I think some of you know, so I might as well just say it out loud, that I am a member of the Badlands Conservation Alliance and was for a period of 3 years recently the president of the board, although I no longer serve as a board member. I am going to start by responding to Ms. Hogan's suggestion at the beginning that we indicate whether or not we agree with what has been said before, and I think that virtually everything that has been said this morning I can say that I agree with and support. I do not have written testimony yet, but I will submit my testimony before the time period is up, and thank you for clarifying the length of time that we have. The one thing that I'm going to present in writing today and wish to be made part of the record of this hearing, excuse me, is an editorial written or printed on April 9th, 2006 in the Grand Forks Herald by Tom Dennis, who is the longtime editorial page editor of the Grand Forks Herald and well-respected in our community. And I believe that he really has, over the time that he has been at the Grand Forks Herald, captures the mood of the community fairly well. I'm not going to read all of this, but I do want to highlight a couple of things that he said. After his introductory periods, he said that the definition of interested party is a limitation that would poorly serve the state. Quoting now, "That's because interested parties who have no ownership rights still may have useful information to offer. Conservationists might alert the commission that a proposal would threaten a wild and scenic rivers bill pending in Congress." I don't know that we have any of those yet, aside. Quoting, "Park officials could ask that a proposed well site be relocated so as not to industrialize a Badlands view. Townspeople who live nearby might ask whether truck traffic could be limited through their downtown. True, if the Industrial Commission opens the floor to such testimony, that means the commissioners would be acknowledging that the surface and mineral owners' rights aren't absolute. But federal, state, and local laws already recognize this in countless ways. One of these, for example, is the North Dakota law that bars landowners from selling to nonprofits without the state's approval. If the entire state is an interested party in such routine, willing buyer, willing seller land sales, then conservation and other interests can be acknowledged in oil field development hearings, especially those in a region known for the Little Missouri National Grassland and Theodore Roosevelt National Park. Those interests need not be heeded. That's up to the commissioners, but at least they should be heard, because there will be times when those parties will have something useful, important for North Dakota, and entirely beneficial to say." End of quote. And I only brought along two copies, but I guess you could make additional copies if needed. And then I would like to add to what Tom Dennis has said in that editorial, the extent to which I disagree slightly with what has been said by other people. The focus of many of the comments today has been on public lands, and I agree wholeheartedly with everything that's been said, that any citizen of North Dakota, whether they belong to a group or are only representing themselves, have a right to speak about the public lands. There is no question about that. And I think you would, in fact, likely be violating federal law if you tried to prevent a citizen from speaking on the impact to the national grasslands the federal law is pretty clear that the public has an interest in that ownership. I think it is also, excuse me, equally clear with regard to the sovereign lands of the state of North Dakota, which, as previous speakers have noted, means the lands under the Missouri River, for example, and Lake Sakakawea. I think that the public has an absolute interest in the preservation and protection of our water sources and supplies. I think the argument might be slightly more tenuous if you're following that track regarding the state school lands, because they have a different purpose in law, which is to provide for the benefit of education of our students and not specifically set out for recreational or other uses. But setting that aside, the piece that I want to add that I think is new and has not been said so far is I think that there is a right on the part of every citizen of North Dakota to speak if they wanted to on every application for a permit to drill that comes before the commission, even those that are on purely private lands. And I think the one person who touched on that is Tracy Potter, when he reminded you that every well impacts the public roadways. Every well, every tank battery, every pipeline that goes from here to there has an impact on the traffic that passes by, and we have all been saddened by the significant increase in traffic deaths on our roadways that have come from oil development. We have all been concerned about the amount of disruption of the social fabric that has occurred from this latest oil development. This, as we all know, is profoundly different than the situation with earlier oil booms, where the impact to the public was much, much more limited. So when you combine the air quality issues from flaring, the dust and increased traffic issues from the amazing amount of traffic that is caused by fracking of wells, not to mention the drilling. When you consider the public safety issues from contamination of our groundwater and other drinking water supplies, I think that it is absolutely the right of any and every North Dakota citizen to come to each and every one of your hearings, whether on private land or not. And I don't mean to try to grind your processes to a halt. I know that most of your hearings are whipped through in 5 minutes or less, and that is a very tightly controlled and fast process. As a member of the board of the Badlands Conservation Alliance, we made a very careful decision that we would, as Ms. Swenson has already testified, focus our attention primarily on the public lands, because we wanted we didn't want this to happen. We didn't want to get ourselves in a position where the commission turned and said, you can't come anymore. And so we have been very, very careful about which cases we choose to testify on. And lest you be concerned that you might be overwhelmed by public participation, I want to share a note that came from the most recent Bureau of Land Management hearings related to flaring. And I think many of you know that those hearings were held recently in Dickinson, North Dakota, as well as other locations around the country. And the BLM, in its environmental assessment, noted the number of concerns they had gotten in their outreach efforts to help draft the regulations. I'm not talking now about the comment period after the regulations were in place, but they had done outreach to communities, they had done outreach to states, they had done outreach to tribal governments, and when all was said and done, not counting the organizational responses they got, they had gotten comments from exactly 9 private citizens across this great country on that topic. So I think you need not be concerned about being overwhelmed. Most members of the public are busy people. They work for a living, they have children to raise, they have other obligations. It's the problem we have in this country is more a problem of apathy than over-involvement by most citizens. So I don't think you have to worry about being overwhelmed. But when there is someone who cares and cares passionately and has something to offer, as Wendy Ross testified, when the National Park Service has an interest in a particular well, even if it happens that it's not immediately adjacent, by all means, you should listen to them. And you have to know that the National Park Service has many other things to do, and they're not going to come to your hearings for kicks or to slow the process down. They are there because they are trying to preserve and maintain the National Park Service as they are ordered to do by Congress, which is undiminished for future generations. And that does include viewscape and night skies. And so they have an interest in flaring, even if it's 20 miles away. The adjacency issue is simply the wrong way to think about what makes someone an interested party. So I just think that you are on the wrong track here, and this... It seems to me, reading through the state law and the regulations that are already in place, that the hearing officer already has the authority to prevent someone from testifying if it appears that they do not have any interest. I mean, if a mentally ill person just decides that they're going to make it their job to drive your people insane by coming to every hearing and babbling about something completely different, you clearly have a right to prevent that. If you decide that there is some group that is participating for an absolutely wrong reason, like they simply want to keep oil development from happening in North Dakota, and so they're going to come in and spend 3 hours in turn every five-minute hearing into a three-hour hearing, you have the right to control that. I mean, obviously, you have the tools you need as an administrative agency to control something if it gets out of hand. But trying to prevent interested people who have something positive to offer is simply wrong. And I'm going to share one... just a little tidbit of information that I learned from a fellow who works for the State Game and Fish Department. He was good enough to provide some of us with a tour of the area of the confluence where the Yellowstone River comes into the Missouri River after there was flooding on the Yellowstone River a couple of springs ago. And we actually went out in a Game and Fish boat and looked at the area that had been impacted by an oil spill. And this was from some old legacy wells, you know, that maybe were located inappropriately a long time ago. But it makes the point because he told us a story that there were other wells in that area that had not been flooded because they were situated on slightly higher ground. And he said that there were the people who lived on that land, the land that was not flooded, had directed the oil company to where they should put that particular well, that because they had lived there for decades and they knew where the spring rise from the Yellowstone, how high on the landscape it came. And when the other well was developed that ended up flooding, it was on a lower elevation. And if in the days when those wells were sited, if the person who had that information, who said, my family has lived here for generations and I know how high that spring rise of the Yellowstone can be, this is a bad place to put the well, it would have saved that oil company millions of dollars that they were forced to pay in cleanup. So this is not about being anti-oil or anti-oil development. It's about accepting the positive information that people have to offer regarding individual situations like where to site a well so that it will cause fewer problems in the future. And so long as the people who appear in front of you are credible and respectful and are offering useful information, it seems to me that the Industrial Commission should wholeheartedly welcome the participation of those people. Thank you.
Questions from the staff?
Senator, you had indicated that you were representing District 18 yourself. Are you also representing BCA?
You know, no, I am not, because I no longer serve on the board of BCA. I just wanted to make a point that some of the things that I know have come from my participation in that organization. I am a member, but since I'm not on the board, I do not believe it would be appropriate for me to say that I represent them.
Okay. When you first started your testimony, you indicated that you agreed with everything that had been said so far. And, of course, we had testimony on the GIS information. Are you also indicating that you support that testimony that was submitted?
You know, I don't claim to be any kind of an expert on that, but the fellow who testified seemed like he was a credible witness and that he knows what he's talking about. And I, as a legislator, I do encourage you to get the very best information you can. I'm serving on a committee right now that is considering how to resolve some of the issues around the whole call before you dig, the one call system. And concerns about being able to locate objects below the ground, you know, is only going to get more serious as we get more and more and more miles of pipeline buried and as our population increases and there's more development going on. So the more precision you can acquire and the more ability that you have to pull information forward into newer and tighter parameters as time passes seems to me good. So I can't evaluate what he said on a technical basis because I'm not trained in GIS or GPS, excuse me. And so I will just say that I agree with the philosophy that he was presenting, but I can't comment specifically on the
thank you
the details.
All right, do we have other parties?
Good morning, and thanks for the opportunity to address you. My name is Kevin Pranis. I work for the Laborers International Union of North America. My work address is 81 East Little Canada Road, St. Paul, Minnesota, 55117. Our union is a half-million member union of construction and public employees in the U.S. and Canada, including thousands who've worked on pipelines, on North Dakota pipeline projects and other construction projects in this state. We're strong supporters of responsible, sustainable development of oil and gas resources. In fact, we fought harder, I think, than any organization in the country for needed infrastructure projects like the Dakota Access Pipeline that was recently approved across four states where there was quite a bit of controversy, but in the end, we think the right decision was made. I'm here today mostly to congratulate the Commission for the rule changes that are proposed, with the notable exception of the definition of interested parties that's been discussed today. But I don't want that definition to overshadow what we think is a very important step forward that North Dakota is considering taking at this moment. Nationally, and I'm going to speak to the national perspective here since I'm not local, but I work with colleagues across oil and gas development and pipeline construction across the country, and this state has developed an unfortunate reputation as a Wild West for oil and gas development. I don't think all of that's merited, but there certainly are some issues that we've seen. That's not only a consequence of the extensive media coverage of the nation-leading death rate for workers and the high-profile oil and saltwater spills. It's also what we hear from our own members, from pipeliners, from non-union pipeliners, from contractors who worked in other jurisdictions and worked here. And unfortunately, many of their experiences on gathering lines is that anything goes. Right? Now, that's not true across the board. There are certainly many responsible owners that insist on standard that sets high standards, as high as you'd find anywhere in the country. But it's not consistent across the board, and I think it's because there's been, well, on the regulated side, the Public Service Commission has established standards for installation and operation of pipelines. There have been a lack of standards on the gathering side, which arguably is more important. There are many more miles of gathering lines. They are the standards for building them, you know, the kind of contractors that build them are very different. Their exposure, particularly to saltwater spills, is much greater. So we think that if fully implemented and enforced, and only if they were fully implemented and enforced, and obviously that's the, you know, challenge here. The proposed rule changes could move North Dakota from the back of the pack to the front of the pack nationally in terms of the standards, the specificity of the standards that are being set for construction and operation of gathering lines in this state, which I think would be a huge step forward for a state where we see this industry continuing to be important for the next 100 years. Not only by establishing installation and operation standards, but also clear lines of responsibility in terms of which parties are responsible and holding those parties accountable. I'm not an experienced pipeliner, as you might guess from my physique. My opinion is informed by conversations with people who do the work, and I would note on the subject of interested parties that the proposed definition would prevent the people who know the most about the process of building and maintaining pipelines from having any part in the regulatory process. I mean, the people who actually do the work, whether it's our members or non-union pipeliners, whether they're there to support a rule change or to support a project because they know it'll be done well because they've worked with that owner, or whether they're whistleblowers who might have experience that would be very troubling information that they need to provide that neither the landowner nor, frankly, some of the management companies nor the commission would be aware of. And so we think that we hope that you're going to move forward with implementing these rule changes, removing the definition of interested parties, and otherwise implement these rules and fully resource their implementation. We think it'll make oil and gas development more sustainable in the state, protect state lands and residents, create more career opportunities for skilled local tradespeople who know how to get the job done, and I think make North Dakota a leader rather than a laggard in the nation.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
I just want to make sure that I'm clear on your testimony. You're in full support of the 29.1 rule edition, which is the pipeline section.
Correct.
And you would suggest eliminating the definition, the interested party definition.
Correct. And not only the pipeline additions, but I mean, we certainly support across the board the standards for the bonding requirements and standards for the saltwater disposal facilities. Yeah, I'd say, with the exception of the interested party definition, we support all the aspects of the proposed rule changes.
All right. Thank you.
All right, do we have other people wishing to testify?
Good morning, my name is Ron Ness. I'm the president of the North Dakota Petroleum Council. My comments today are on behalf of our 475 members that we represent through the Petroleum Council. We are still in the process of formulating our comments. I would like to make our written comments. I'd like to make some comments just on the change on 4302, 0301, 25, the interested party comment. Most of the discussion has been about the ability of the public to comment. And I think there's another side to this that we are having quite the debate amongst ourselves. There are public comments and open comment processes for legislative processes or for rule processes such as this. And there are adjudicated processes such as are used on the NDC permit applicants and the process that you use on your regular meetings. The issue for industry really becomes one of an economic or competitive interest, and where should the weight be held? And I think that's the debate that we're having. We are trying to determine whether or not there's a way to separate comments. For instance, in this economic climate, you may have mineral owners who want or do not want a well drilled or completed because of they feel that the costs of the current price of oil are not where they think they should be, and they'd rather have that deferred to another time. You may have competitors who see advantages to testifying on or behalf of someone else's applicant. You may have landowners or mineral owners or royalty owners' interests with the same type of competitive or economic interests. We have been working on a definition that basically would try and provide certain weight to potentially independent parties having no personal justiciable property ownership or management interest in the ability to provide input
and somehow give greater weight to directly impacted parties such as landowners, mineral owners, royalties, and the permittee. I think that is a challenge that you have, notwithstanding the public comment. I think the public comment is, for the most part, I think, has always been welcome and open at your process. The challenge is when you have competing interests, how do you determine where the weight should be given? And certainly a landowner, a mineral owner, a royalty owner on a specific project versus another landowner, mineral owner with maybe out direct impact on that permit has a different interest. And should it be viewed somewhat differently because it's an economic or a competitive interest as opposed to a public issue like we've heard previously today. So that is what we have been working on, and we will continue to work on that and get it either in our written comments or in verbal comments, and we will try and wrap up our comments and get them made. If that stands for any questions.
All right. Do we have other parties wishing to provide comments or testify?
My name is Lynn Wolf. I come from Fargo, North Dakota. I'm a board member of the Dakota Resource Council. Have worked for them for a number of years as well, and we're a membership organization that works on issues important to our members and wants to make sure that things are done correctly and right. And so as we talk about particularly the issue of participation, I want you to understand that we came a ways today too to make sure we get part of this hearing. And because of that, we also agree with many that have been here before talking about the importance of making sure that the individual citizen of North Dakota has the opportunity to talk and to present as they see fit on the issue. And so, keeping with that, I'll keep it short, but a membership group that works on issues important to them is important to all of us as we move forward, no matter whether we're western part of the state or we're in the east part. And I thank you for your time.
Is there anyone else that wishes to provide comments or testimony? Last call.
Item of the 10-day comment period and all that works.
Yep. So as previously mentioned, pursuant to North Dakota Century Code 28-32-12, the commission will have a written comment period during which data, views, or arguments concerning the proposed rules or any feedback regarding today's testimony or comments received or any of the testimony or comments received at the hearings that will be held later this week. Those will be received by the commission and made part of the rulemaking record to be considered by the commission. All comments received both today, later this week, and during the written comment period will be given serious consideration by the commission. All written comments must be submitted by 5 p.m. on Monday, April 25th, 2016, and will be made a part of the record for this case, as will comments received prior to today's hearings. Comments received after 5 p.m. on Monday, April 25th, 2006, unfortunately cannot be made part of the record. And that will conclude our hearing for today. Thank you for everyone that attended. Thank you.